Hello everybody and welcome to Liam Unfiltered. This is probably just going to be a quicker episode this week because, I don't know, I just feel like having a bit of a ramble about certain things. Liam Unfiltered, by the way, is executive produced by Cezla Cube, our top level backer on Patreon. So thank you so much to him. I'm just going to dive right into today's topics. I'm going to give you a little update on content. I don't have too much to share, but things are going on. I'm interviewing people and stuff like that. So some gears are turning. Some things are certainly being uncovered. And I've got a lot of things to share in the near future. If you're a fan of Owendon and Elite Beat Agents, holy shit. There's quite a lot to share in the way of trivia. And honestly, some quite sad stuff as well. But we'll get to that when we do. Anyway, I guess the main thing that I wanted to talk about today was to address this Nintendo Direct rumor, which has seemed to crop up over the past week or so. This originates from a site called Gaming Intel, which is gaining a bit of a reputation for being quite unreliable, for reporting some falsehoods, some fake rumors. It's happened quite a lot now. And so today, they said that Nintendo would be announcing a Nintendo Direct to air on the 11th of April. And they said that it would be announced today, which was the 10th of April. Hopefully I get this up on the same day I'm recording it. It's the 10th today, and they said it would be announced today and on tomorrow, just to clarify. So yeah, that obviously didn't happen. The day went by, and they got a lot of heat for that, understandably, because that's what happens. The Nintendo fans can get pretty aggressive, and maybe I am making a generalization there. I obviously don't mean all Nintendo fans, or most of them, but there is a vocal minority of Nintendo fans that is very intense with this stuff, with these rumors. And even the suggestion that maybe a Direct won't be as good as they expect, that's something that they hope will be in, won't be in there. If someone's heard that, then they are quite likely to go and harass that person. How it works is it gets posted on Reset Era or Nintendo Reddit, the Switch Reddit or whatever. And a very toxic contingent of people from those communities, because they're so poorly moderated, will go and attack said outlet or said person or whatever. I've been on the receiving end of this hate machine many times myself. But yeah, that's how it goes. Anyway, yes, Gaming Intel was under attack today because they got the date wrong and all this stuff. And I kind of just wanted to talk about Gaming Intel in general and the responsibility of the press in covering this stuff. I think there is an interesting discussion to be had here. One thing that I want to start off by saying is that this will not be a podcast just to shit on Gaming Intel and eviscerate them or whatever you want to say. You know, this isn't trying to start some internet beef with them. Because really, the people who own the site, I've spoken to myself, they seem all right. And I'm honestly convinced that they're not doing this. They're not making all of these massive errors out of, you know, malintent. I don't think that they are trying to trick people, that there is some kind of cynical intention just to create clickbait and get people onto the website, even if they know it's wrong. I actually think that they believe what they have been told. But I want to talk about how that site works, because I see a lot of people talking about this website, and they don't seem to understand how it functions, how it collates its information. And it may surprise you to learn that there is, like, as far as I can tell, zero vetting process for how they collect this information. As I understand it, and I have had this experience myself, what happens is they will find someone on Twitter, you know, like Marcus Sellers. That's, I don't know, I kind of think Marcus might be one of the people involved with this website. But yeah, basically what they do is they find someone on Twitter who maybe is in the news for sharing insider information, and then they will contact them behind the scenes in private, and they'll say to them, hey, Do you have insider information? We can give you some money to write an article, or give us that information and we'll publish an article on our website. And they've done this to me. They've done this to many other people that I've spoken to behind the scenes. I was speaking to someone quite recently who was trying to do an article on this, but I don't think it really amounted to anything. I don't know if he's still doing that piece. But essentially, yeah, what they will do is they will contact random people on Twitter and offer, frankly, a very meager amount of money to take insider information off their hands. In my case, their vetting process involved them asking me who I was. Like, they did no research before they asked me. And it was the same with other people. They just kind of like, they see someone on Twitter who maybe has a decent amount of followers. They hit them up behind the scenes and they're like, hey, do you maybe know any rumors that you could tell us and we'll pay you? And it's like such a small amount of money, you know, it's like next to nothing. In my case, and in the cases of many other people who I've spoken to, they all declined. I don't know anyone personally who has agreed to give them information, who has agreed to work with them. You know, I pick and choose who I want to work with, and I'd never heard of this site before. And as far as I could tell, their vetting process for information, their standards did not appear to be very high, in addition to the fact that they wanted to pay me next to nothing. So, yeah, that's kind of some insight into how gaming intel functions. As far as I know, that is what I've heard. And, yeah, I've heard from a bunch of people who've had the same experience. Now, here's something that you might find interesting. If you are interested in gaming intel and this slightly mysterious site, they offer to pay you a tiny upfront fee. And then they essentially pay you, I guess, a cut of the traffic the website generates, you know, from selling ads and so forth. You get a pretty small rate. But essentially, yeah, the more traffic you get to the article web pages from you, the more money you get paid. So what I think has gone on here, actually, is that they've contacted someone who doesn't really care about credibility or whatever, and is maybe ghostwriting for them, and they are just feeding gaming intel a bunch of fucking nonsense. And it's either one person, or it's a few different people. And so, yeah, I think gaming intel is not necessarily some evil, cynical website that's just trying to make money. But I think they are being had. I think they are being manipulated to some degree by parties who want to just use their site to make money and are feeding them the most, you know, sensationalist nonsense Nintendo rumors, typically, about the Nintendo 64 Mini, about Nintendo Directs. And so that kind of explains what we have here. And I have a strong hunch, actually, that Marcus Sellers might be one of these people who are involved in writing. If you look at who is credited with authoring these articles on the website, they are almost anonymous. They appear to be fake names. It's stuff like Stephen C. and Charlie C. and that kind of thing. There's no full names. So they're almost untraceable, as far as I can tell. So yeah, this site is interesting to me. But yeah, I think they're being had, to be honest. That is my theory personally. And yeah, people should not be reporting on it, because you might notice that I'm sticking up for them a little bit, that I don't think that they are just this cynical organization trying to take advantage of the fans. But on the other hand, yeah, they are unreliable. And they're spreading nonsense, and they should know better by this point, you know? So maybe there is some cynical intentions in there. I don't know. But that's my experience of gaming intel. I think they should know better by now. They've been doing this for a little while. And they've pretty much ruined their reputation, unfortunately, by, you know, not having a vetting process, by hiring untrustworthy sources. And again, pretty sure Marcus Sellers is involved. You know, that is someone I spoke to suggested that they had heard that. So at least that there are some murmurs about that being true. And I've seen him tweet about gaming intel as well. So I kind of get the impression that Marcus just pulls this stuff out of his arse like he usually does. And now he's feeding it at this site as well. Maybe, you know, this is all just nonsense what I'm saying right now. But yeah, that's just kind of what I suspect is going on here. Somebody's taking advantage of them. This site is inexperienced. They don't know how to vet information. They don't know how to do the due diligence. And so that results in, you know, many incorrect rumors. As much as I enjoy talking to them and they seem like all right guys, I don't want to entirely jump to their defense because they clearly have very low journalistic standards. And yeah, the site is a problem. And to be honest, I think if you are a website, I don't want to name any names, but if you are a publication especially, or a fan site or whatever, and you're publishing these as, you know, possible credible rumors and you're sharing these around, then I do think you are culpable. You know, you should be held accountable to some degree because you are responsible. The wheel just keeps turning, you know. You give them attention, you give them clicks, and then they're just going to keep cranking out more fucking nonsense and getting it spread around. We're trapped in a circle, if you can see what I mean. We're trapped in a cycle. And the way to break that loop is by, you know, ignoring them. I think it's okay, honestly, to post on social media about it if, say, you're just an individual or whatever. But if you run a website where people, you know, rely upon what you report and that kind of thing, then, or even a YouTube channel, right? I think you got to be careful with what you share. And this just goes back to what I've talked about before. People's standards appear to be incredibly low. And that's kind of disappointing. I think the Nintendo websites, again, without naming any names, could do a lot better than talking about this stuff. There's so many more interesting topics that could be discussed, you know. Go out there and do a bit of actual journalism, you know. Talk to some developers, you know. Developers are interesting and they have stories to share with the world. There are many secrets to uncover. So we don't need to be reporting on what Gaming Intel says about the next Nintendo Direct or whatever, you know. They've been proven wrong time and time again. And, you know, again, I don't want to attack them. But, I mean, it's just common sense, you know. It's not reliable, and it doesn't need to be reported upon. Alright, so I'm going to move on now, I think, talk about something else. If you have any thoughts on Gaming Intel yourself, give me a comment on Patreon, let me know what you're thinking about that. If you have any questions, oh, I must do some questions as well, that has reminded me to do that. I have some that I need to answer. Before we get to that, though, I wanted to mention this whole thing that had been it's been going around for like the past week or two, and I keep getting messages about this, people asking me about it. There was this story a few years ago, back in about 2015, which I reported on, and essentially I was talking to Alex Ward, who was the former vice president of Criterion Games. And he had mentioned to me that someone from Nintendo reached out to him and said, do you have any interest in working on F-Zero with us? And I reported on that. I got that information from Alex Ward himself. I interviewed him. I asked him a bunch of questions to do with Black and other games that he'd worked on, like Burnout. And so he gave me that information. I run it on my YouTube channel, and you can still see that video a day. And over the years, that story has become so twisted, unfortunately. And even, I think, Nintendo Life themselves embellished the story to some degree. One thing that I'll point out is that I did not write the story for Nintendo Life. I think my name might be attached to that article, but I didn't write it. I had nothing to do with that. I made my video... And then they sort of transcribed it into an article and sort of, you know, judged it up to make it more kind of click-friendly, I guess. So, you know, not blaming Nintendo Life for that. But yeah, I was not responsible for whatever the content of that Nintendo Life article was. I was never paid to work with them. They just heard that I was working on this story and they wanted to run it simultaneously. So I said, yes, let's do it. And so, yeah, I stand by my original report. But Alex essentially came out this week and he said that the story had gotten twisted. And what essentially had happened was somebody reached out to him, a junior at Nintendo of Europe, and asked him if there would be any interest in doing an F-Zero game. And he said, no, we are owned by EA, so we can't. And we're already working on Need for Speed, so we can't anyway, even if we wanted to. And yeah, a bunch of websites kind of ran that as this from the angle of, oh, wasn't that original story wrong? But if you go back and look at my video, I reported exactly what Alex says in the video. You know, I was not wrong about what I said. You know, this wasn't a rumor I pulled out of my arse. I spoke to Alex Ward myself 3 years ago now, you know? So everything I said in that video was right. And any website that says that my original report is wrong is wrong. You know, if you go back and watch my video, it's consistent with everything Alex Ward has ever said. And, you know, there might have been some other sites that embellished it, but I certainly didn't. I let him see my video before I posted it. So it had his seal of approval and I posted it. And he never came to me and he said, hey, Liam, you know, you've got the story wrong. So yeah, I've no reason to believe that I have the story wrong. I stand by my video. And any site saying that we made it up or we got it from a faulty source is wrong. We got it from Alex himself. And I absolutely stand by that. I think the big problem is, honestly, a lot of people just didn't watch my original video. It has about 20,000 views, but this is such a well-circulated story at this point that I think most people just assume that I talked about a F-Zero game being in development or whatever, but that's distinctly not what I said at all. And it all goes back to this widespread problem we have right now, is that people don't read articles, they don't watch videos, they fucking glance at article headlines or whatever. And some of the Nintendo websites are very inclined to twist stories to make them more sensationalist, to make them more interesting, even if it means changing the meaning of stories. So I think some people did report on it from the angle of, oh, Criterion almost did an F-Zero game, or whatever, or they were doing an F-Zero game and it got cancelled, or because I typically talk about console games. Yeah, so I'm just getting a bit sick and tired of it. To say that my original story misreported what Alex says is just nonsense. It's just total misrepresentation. And I'm still proud of that original scoop. It was a rumor I'd heard from another source related to Criterion, and I went and asked Alex about it, and he said, yeah, it's true. So yeah, again, as I always say, if you hear a story like this, go back to the source. Go back and listen or read what the original author said before you believe some prat on a forum. Anyway, my friends, on a lighter note, you know, to get that rant out of the way, I have some questions, and they were left on the previous podcast. So if you have any questions for me to answer on the next podcast, leave them in the comment section, as we normally do, and I'll do my best to answer them. And yeah, I just read these out live, you know, I don't monitor the comment sections that closely. But yeah, here are some of the questions that we've got here. The first one that I can see is from Jared Kozar. He says, hello, Liam. Hello, Jared. I have some questions. This is what Jared is saying, by the way. I have some questions. Do you know about Animal Crossing Switch or Zelda Breath of the Wild 2? No, I don't really know anything about those, I'm afraid. They're pretty tight-lipped about that. So, not many rumours going on there at the minute. I do think that there is another Zelda game in development that they haven't announced yet. But yeah, we'll get to that when we do. But anyway, your other question here is, what's your favourite and least favourite Pokemon gen? Well, Jared, I'm not the biggest Pokemon fan in the world, and I can only give you a fairly uninspired answer to these questions. I'm not sure which my favourite Pokemon generation is. Again, I'm not the biggest fan, but just on nostalgia reasons, I'd probably just go with the first one. I really like the designs, and at the time it was such a novel and unique idea, and there's a lot of nostalgia attached to them for me. When I was a kid, and I got really into Pokemon briefly, I was really into the trading card game. The ones that I was attached to, it was the first generation and the second generation. And then around about the time the third one was coming out, I started to sort of, I was less engaged with the franchise and I stopped playing the games for a while. My least favorite generation of Pokemon, I'm not sure which generation this is, but it's the ones in Black and White. I think they're pretty uninspired, kind of bland. I heard that they were done by an American illustrator as opposed to, like a Japanese concept artist instead. So maybe that's why. Maybe there's some, different artistic takes there. But I remember, you had Pokemon that were literally just like trash. And it's like an ice cream on and whatever. And it's like, I don't know, that feels a little too uninspired to me. I know there is literally like a Pokemon in the first generation that's a bomb or something like that, and there's a one that's a magnet, but I don't know, my answer is still that generation. The designs, none of them are really that memorable or interesting to me, and so on that purely superficial reasoning, that's my least favorite. So I hope I've answered your question there. So I got a long ass question here from Esky64. Just to note, I have read your full question through. I'm not going to read it all because it's kind of long, and my vision is a bit blurry right now because I'm tired, so you'll have to excuse me. But to shorten his question down, he's basically saying, he says, have you heard anything about a revamp of Marvel vs. Capcom? After MVCI bombed, the game was left abandoned by the devs, but late last year, rumors started up about Marvel and Capcom making a new game off the bones of MVCI, think Smash 4 to Ultimate. I haven't heard anything like this, actually. That would very much surprise me because MVCI was a disaster. And I actually spoke to some people who worked on it who said that they would be very surprised if Capcom chose to work with Disney again on that series. So unless there's been a significant change of heart, then I can't really see another one of those games happening anytime soon. Unless they've reached some agreement to do some bare bones upgrade. I can't imagine that happening, to be honest. I am kind of reading between the lines, but I don't think people realize how bad the development of that game went and how there was some real tension between Capcom and Marvel, particularly with some of the Disney imposed restrictions and that kind of thing. There were a lot of developers at Capcom who were upset with the way that stuff went. And, maybe I'll do a video about this sometime. But that's the way that went. And, it would surprise me. I mean, it's not beyond the realm of possibility, I admit. And I'd like to see them do more of it. But that's what I've heard. All right, next question here is from Kurai. He says, hey, Liam, great show as always. Thank you. I was wondering, have you heard about or have thought about looking into what happened to Hyperconnect 2's Final Fantasy VII remake that Square Enix took back? Seems like they were really knee-deep into development before it got cancelled and folded back into Square Enix. That is a pretty interesting question you got there. I've thought about it, honestly. I don't have any direct connections to that project myself. I never followed it that closely. I'm not a huge Final Fantasy person, but that's something I would definitely consider. I am, and I'm not sure if you've noticed, I'm attempting to kind of, develop contacts in Japan. I'm trying to do that more because if you look back at some of my Unseen 64 videos, which I did a couple of years ago, you'll notice that almost every single one of them is on a Western game. It's on a Western project of some capacity. Because I am not a Japanese speaker. And if you don't speak Japanese, like myself, then it is very hard to get in touch with people out there. But I am trying to find the few Westerners who are out there in Japan who are connected to these projects. And yeah, I'm trying to make friends at Capcom, at Square. There are a few people who are willing to talk, who can talk to Japanese people on my behalf and ask them questions and that. So yeah, I am trying to, you know, get into doing more stuff like this. So it's something I'm potentially interested in. I'm not going to say it's something I'll definitely do, but the odds of me doing it are higher than ever, I'd say, or higher than they were previously, because I am actively trying to, you know, cover more Japanese projects. If you look at the Game History Secrets videos, quite a few of them, I think, are Japanese. You know, there's Okami 2 that I mentioned. I talk about a bunch of Japanese Nintendo pitches. I've talked about, you know, Sakurai potentially working with Oculus. So yeah, I am trying a bit more to cultivate contacts in Japan and people who are connected there and that kind of thing. So yeah, that's just a bit of insight into how my whole shit is going on. The last question I've got here is from Ron Barron, who asks, the recent BioWare report on Kotaku and how many at Edmonton views BioWare Austin as a B team made me think of how often people talk of Platinum having an A team and B team, with the B team being supposedly responsible for Legend of Korra, Star Fox, Ninja Turtles, etc. Does this have any basis in reality? Not really. I think, you know, one thing that people should understand is that Platinum Games has two branches. So maybe that is where some of the confusion is coming from. They have a base, I think, in Kyoto and in Osaka. Don't quote me on that, but I think that's correct. A lot of the big games are developed, I think, in Osaka. I'm not entirely sure about that. My Japanese geography is not perfect. But yeah, there is this perception that Platinum Games is one studio, and it's not. It's two. They own two different branches. There is not necessarily an A team or a B team. I think that definitely undermines the work that they do. They have staff that they send from one branch to another. And I think, you know, they portion out their staff. They ration them out on a case-by-case basis. So it's wrong to say that there is a set team that does the mediocre games, and there's a set team that makes the Bayonettas or whatever, you know what I mean? Because they all share staff on different projects. Staff will work on multiple projects at a time. That is often what happens. So yeah, it's incorrect to say there's an A team and a B team making the good games and the shitty games. So yeah, that's just not true. And I think that's a pretty definitive answer about that. Alright, so to wrap us up, I'm just going to say that I'm still working on my video, still writing it. I'm speaking to a lot of different developers. It should be a pretty long video. There's been a lot of things that I've learned that I want to include in this video. My Elite Beat Agents video, my Awendon video, whatever that's going to, you know, take shape as. I'm still writing it on the fly. So yeah, if you're interested in that kind of thing, I think you'll enjoy it. I think there's going to be some interesting stuff in there, particularly related to, you know, why wasn't there a sequel to Elite Beat Agents, and why wasn't there a third Awendon game, and, you know, there will be some answers, I think. If you've ever wondered what happened to the series, I think you'll come away from this video a little bit more knowledgeable. So with that, I'm going to go into some Patreon backer shoutouts. Shoutouts to top level backers: Ahmed Zainal, Brian Guzman, Don Koopman, Eric Flaris, Yana Randak, Carl Coverdale, Kurai, Centinator of Team Haruhi, Cezlacube, Shane Gale, and Stuart Radley. Thank you so much for backing, everyone. And yeah, more content on the way soon, as always. I'm trying to do these podcasts a little more regularly, you know, trying to push myself to see how much I can get out there. Once again, give us a like on Patreon if you enjoyed this episode. Give us a comment, you know, tell us how it's going, and if you have any questions, leave them there too. I'll answer them on the next one. Thank you for listening, and I'll catch you guys next time. Bye for now.